You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, July 20th, 2017.
Well, if you can imagine, you're in a convoy of armored vehicles grinding up these switchbacks into these essentially 13th century villages.
Today on Big Talk with Michael Glab, a review of some of Big Talk's best features dedicated to WFHB's outgoing news director, Joe Crawford.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks, what would you change about the state of Indiana? But first, these local headlines.
White-tailed deer at the Griffey Lake Nature Preserve are close to destroying the preserve to the point it may not recover. That's according to a report presented to the Board of Parks Commissioners in a special session on Tuesday evening. Steve Cotter is the Natural Resources Manager with Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department. He said the deer's devastating impact was identified in the Griffey Lake Master Plan back in 2008.
The large dripping vegetation in the forest understory. This has destroyed plant and animal diversity in the most heavily browsed areas. These heavily browsed areas also provide opportunities for invasive species to become established.
Cotter said a survey conducted in April and May of this year showed the average number of flowering plants at Griffey Lake Nature Preserve is significantly lower than Brown County State Park or Morgan Monroe State Forest. Cotter said the most disturbing discovery made this spring was a lack of native trees outside of the test areas.
There were no native trees found outside the enclosures. So the ash, hickory, sassafras, beech, musselwood, and sugar maple only showed up inside the enclosures, which if you look at Griffey right now, there are a lot of tall trees out there and it looks like a healthy forest from the outside. But when you consider that there are really very few, and in some cases, some areas, no seedlings coming up behind those adult trees, it makes us very concerned about what the future of the forest is going to look like.
During his presentation to the Board of Parks Commissioners, Cotter added that areas heavily hit by deer are open to invasion by non-native plants.
While we are cognizant that deer do limit the growth of some invasive plants, they also spread them both through their hooves and on their fur and through defecation, but they also have a very important competitive effect which benefits the invasives and is to the detriment of the native plants.
Griffey Lake sits on 1,200 acres that comprise Bloomington's largest park. Cotter said preserving plant diversity at the Nature Preserve must be a priority for the current administration and for residents.
We know through studies that have been done out there that at least 565 plant species, almost 100 mammal species, 160 different bird species, and 50 reptile and amphibian species depend on that property to survive.
A local task force, which studied the effects of an uncontrolled deer population feeding in Griffey Lake for 2 years, said in 2014, the forest could be stripped past the point where it could rejuvenate itself.
Basically, the takeaway is that if deer pressure is not reduced soon, many of those propagules, seeds and tubers and other things that plants use to reproduce, will likely disappear, which would result in a loss of local genetic diversity.
Elizabeth Tompkins is the Park Department's liaison to the Environmental Resource Advisory Council. Tompkins read a letter from the Advisory Council encouraging the city to authorize a deer cull this winter.
The members of EREC, Environmental Resources Advisory Council, strongly and unanimously agree that overabundance of deer at Griffey Lake Nature Preserve is one of the most important issues facing our city parks.
The city had authorized a deer cull in 2014 and had contracted with White Buffalo Incorporated to conduct it. but the Griffey Lake deer reportedly ignored the bait set by white buffalo in favor of acorns, which were particularly plentiful that year, resulting in a cull being suspended. At their Tuesday night meeting, Commissioner member Les Coyne asked Cotter if the city has a limited time to take action.
How much time do we have to deal with this and the strategies we've talked about, the culling, et cetera, have to be pretty effective, I assume, to get a recovery in a period of time that's critical that could go the other way.
I wish I had a clear answer as far as how much time we have. I can say there is reason for optimism based on the Brown County State Park experience. Their deer population was much more, I would say, damaging to the park than what we see at Griffey currently. We don't want to get to the point where the deer are starving and standing on their hind legs, eating as high as they can. But once they implemented those hunts at the state park, the vegetation really has rebounded spectacularly. So the seeds and the other propagules that are still there, we expect, and based on the exposure studies too, we think that it's not too late to restore a healthy community out there.
Both Coyne and Commission member Joe Hoffman noted Brown County State Park and Morgan Monroe State Forest have rebounded from deforestation by implementing regular controlled deer hunts. Hoffman said Bloomington may have to consider using the same tactic as Griffey Lake.
With ISTEP officially on its way out, the state is in a market for a new standardized testing system. The Department of Education announced last week that it would accept proposals through August 24th for iLearn and iRead, the new testing system and reading exams which will be replacing ISTEP. The state expects a final recommendation on a vendor by October, although the new testing system won't be implemented in schools until 2019. Approval for the replacement came earlier in the spring, although lawmakers decided to repeal ISTEP more than a year ago. Finding a testing vendor means the state will be using a, quote, off-the-shell, unquote, test. This comes as a change from ISTEP, which was developed specifically for Indiana's academic standards. Director of Student Assessment at the Indiana Department of Education, Charity Flores, says one benefit of the state adopting such a test would be the ability to draw from other educational groups' practices.
I think in using an off-the-shelf program, we would want to ensure that quality and alignment are really paramount in terms of how that has been constructed. And so in Indiana's development, we've had to go through a cycle where we develop all of our own items and aren't necessarily leveraging the benefits of a larger pool of items or some of those quality standards. So I think this potentially gives us the opportunity to use those best practices on a larger scale.
The nonprofit, nonpartisan educational blog Chalkbeat stated that the iLearn testing system is based on recommendations from educators, policy experts, and lawmakers who studied test replacements. One of the main differences from the old ISTEP system is that iLearn will be computer-based. The test will be online and reportedly adaptive to each student, meaning that the difficulty of the test's questions will change depending on whether the student answers the questions right or wrong.
ISTEP is what we refer to as being fixed form, where all students essentially take the same sets of items. And so there's not any flexibility in terms of items being presented that are more or less difficult to groups of students. And so with a computer adaptive model, we are able to present items in a way that better meet a student's level of mastery. So as we present items, the next item may be more or less difficult based on how they're responding to that first item, as an example.
Some students may be eligible to take the tests on paper, but that kind of testing will be restricted to specific populations, special needs students, for instance, or school districts with poor internet connectivity. The testing schedule will also change. Elementary and middle school students will take a new test at the end of the year, and high schools will give end-of-course exams in 9th grade biology and Algebra 1, as well as 10th grade English. The state will also be required to administer a social studies test to students in either the fifth or eighth grade. While the state says it hopes iLearn will prove to be a more efficient system than iStep, some controversial aspects surrounding the concept of standardized testing remain. Indiana State Teachers Association Director Teresa Meredith says she's not sure how different iLearn will be for students. It will be impossible to tell until the test is finally administered in 2019, but Meredith says it still sounds similar to iStep in practice. As the state continues to accept proposals for vendors, it is requesting that whoever provides the test will also be responsible for training and support necessary for administering it. This comes after an iStep debacle earlier this year, in which 700 students at 20 schools were accidentally allowed to use calculators on this year's math exam, and their scores were subsequently tossed. iLearn is set to be implemented by the 2018-2019 school year. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandewiel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
WFHB News Director Joe Crawford took a chance on Big Talk 3 years ago. The idea for a weekly regular feature on the Daily Local News spotlighting compelling people from in and around Bloomington might have been intriguing, but carrying it out would be a challenge. After some fits and starts, Big Talk became a Thursday fixture on the DLN a year ago this month. This week, producer and host Michael Glab recalls some memorable moments from the show and hopes Joe's faith in him was warranted. Today's episode of Big Talk is dedicated to our departing news director.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. Joe Crawford gave me the go-ahead to produce Big Talk 3 years ago. He trusted me to dig up the most interesting people in Bloomington. I hope I've rewarded him for that trust. Let's hear from a few of the people who've appeared on Big Talk. Our first guest was Nate Powell in January 2014. A cartoonist and graphic novel author, Nate co-wrote the best-selling three-book series March. Before he became a full-time author and illustrator, Nate worked in a very different world.
My other career, I guess you could say, was from 99 to 2009. My full-time job was providing care and support for adults with developmental disabilities and dual diagnosis. My older brother, Peyton, has autism and some other disabilities. And it took a while until one of his friends from high school suggested that I try working with folks with disabilities of different kinds. And it just, you know, it was like magic. I finally felt like I had something that I could do with the unique experience of my life growing up in my family. I was good at it. I cared about it. And it was just something that I, you know, never looked back from until I had the one chance to quit my job to try to go full-time as a cartoonist.
That same year, Charlotte Zitlow, a stalwart on the Bloomington scene for 50 years, came on Big Talk. The prospect of a female president being elected in 2016 turned the venerable politician and activist vulnerable.
I'm going to say right now, I'm going to go out on a limb, I'm going to say our next president is a woman.
I think that's probably true.
Will that be a great feeling for you?
Probably. You know, it's really funny. Yeah, you're bringing tears to my eyes. When they named the Justice Building after me, which was you know, extraordinary, and I still haven't quite gotten over it. They called, and Mark Stoops called and said, Charlotte, we'd like to name the Justice Building after you. And I said, oh, Mark, okay. And I said, he said, would that be okay? And I said, you know, I suppose I should say no, you know, in all humility. But I'm not going to. And I said, I'm really touched. It's wonderful. And I got off the phone and I told Paul, I'm going to name it the Zitlow Building. He said, it should be the Charlotte Zitlow Building. People did say that, you know, and the newspaper even said it. The number of responses that I got, especially from older women, was pretty overwhelming. You know, it meant so much to them to have a woman's name on a building. Wow. And if you think about it, there are very few buildings in this country that have women's names on. Very few.
Well, yeah.
Very few. And so not because it was me, but the symbolism of having a woman appreciated meant a lot to a lot of women, and I think that's the way we'll all feel if we have a woman president.
The 2016 presidential election turned out differently, though. The winner shocked and dismayed a lot of people in this town. One of them was Indiana University political science professor Jeff Isaac. Jeff Isaac is a guy who has a presence on social media.
That is true.
I have a feeling there's a red face coming up here.
Not from me?
Yes, from you. Are you ready?
Have you hacked into my emails?
I'm going to quote from you.
Quote from me.
Donald Trump is a
red face? Why? I mean, if we talk about him long enough, I might get angry and then get a red face. He is a
You're a professor of political science at a state university. How can you be speaking like this?
Because I want to. Because I exercise the freedom that I possess in this country. There are actually, it raises some serious issues. There are some academics who have gotten in a lot of trouble at their universities for tweeting or making statements on social media that are very provocative, perhaps incendiary. Quite honestly, the ones that I'm thinking of were much more maybe threatening or something than calling Donald Trump a but they share in common the fact that they're using not only a non-scholarly way of talking, but kind of emoting, expressing strong opinions in a way that is very different than the way I express myself when I'm publishing, writing essays for journals. I regularly write for a blog called Public Seminar. But on Facebook, there's a whole other thing that's going on. People are posting stuff about what they ate, the music that they like, how they feel today, what the weather's like, and, you know, cursing at a neighbor for making noise or saying that Donald Trump is a which I'm often moved to say.
Woodworker and furniture maker Nancy Hiller learned her craft in England at a time when few, if any, women worked in a wood shop.
The first three jobs that I had in workshops in England, each of which was an absolute trip, culminating in a short-term temporary job at the Imperial War Museum at Duxford near Cambridge, which was a complete fabulous blast because of my co-workers there who were all unabashedly sexist and uninhibited in their use of the English language. It was a super great time. It was very fun. And we got along like gangbusters.
You're being serious.
I am totally being serious. I loved those guys. And they were all guys, so I was the only woman working in their workshops at the time. I would hope that there are other women now there working in the workshops.
Author and war correspondent Doug Wissing has been embedded with U.S. Army soldiers several times throughout the war in Afghanistan. He compared the arrival of an American convoy in a small mountain village in that country with a Taliban force dropping in on an American small town.
Well, if you can imagine, you're in a convoy of armored vehicles, grinding up these switchbacks into these essentially 13th century villages. And the security soldiers get out. Your security platoon gets out first, and they're dressed in 50 pounds of body armor. They're carrying 75 pounds of weaponry and ammunition. There's machine gunners on top of the armored vehicle. Sometimes there's going to be an Apache helicopter circling above. And the Afghans come out and they sit down with you under the shura tree, under the meeting tree, the shade tree at the edge of the village. Well, this would be how it would be. Imagine 8 foot tall Taliban on armored flying carpets. And they come swooping in and tell all our women to put on burqas. And I'd be thinking the shotguns would be coming out.
Finally, on a lighter note, Ariel Silk's performer and drag king Sue Rawl, she does a weekly male impersonation show at the back door, described her stage character.
My character that I've developed is kind of like a washed out glam rocker. So like, you know, he's burnt out. He's tattooed. I spend a lot of money on fake tattoos on him.
What's his name?
Jamie Spangle.
Jamie Spangle.
Jamie Spangle. Yeah, rhymes with dangle. There's guitars and there's smoke machines and confetti and silly string and yeah, it's just, there's cat suits and it's insanity.
Thanks to Joe Crawford for making Big Talk possible. We'll be back next week with another notable Bloomington figure. Joe, we couldn't have done it without you.
That was Big Talk with Michael Glab on the 1-year anniversary of the show and a see you soon to outgoing news director Joe Crawford.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
Summer is here, the weather is beautiful, and yet there's always something one wishes for. This week on Voices in the Street, if you could change one thing in the state of Indiana, what would it be?
I wish we weren't 200 years back because of the fact that we're such a conservative state. So like the whole like legalizing marijuana and stuff, how much that could help our state out just in general. And also the fact of like, I wish we were more of like a Democratic state than a Republican state. You know, less conservative, more liberal. It's just because Indiana is just such an awful place sometimes, man.
If I was to change one thing about Indiana, I think that more people need to visit Indiana because I love Indiana and I'm very happy here. I did not grow up here and I moved here and decided to stay here from out of state. And so I think that more people need to come here and actually see what the state has to offer and all the good things about Indiana. And then I think a lot of public opinion would change about the state once they actually see how great it is.
How Republican it is?
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Is that too blunt?
I wish that everyone was more for like equality and like
the environment.
The environment.
The government. It's always been not the best. While I've lived here, and I've lived on the East Coast, and it's so much more conservative. Not in this town specifically. This is a very liberal town, obviously, but it's not the best. I wish it would. I wish we could just get everybody together and change it, because it's...
I guess it would be to have them expand healthcare. Because I have an older daughter who needs healthcare, and I don't like the way they continually threaten to change the HIP program.
I guess Bloomington, I would just say the homeless population. I mean, not change it, but, you know, be more accommodating and fix that agenda, and instead of, you know, just shifting them, find a solution rather than just a temporary band-aid on a bullet hole.
I'd lower property tax.
The diversity. I think more people should come here.
Be more forward-thinking. Just think that we tend to be in Indiana a little too stuck in our ways and resistant to change and taking on new innovative solutions to problems.
Construction. Yeah, construction is stupid, and making weed legal.
I guess I would change the fact that it's mainly a red state. You know, I don't like living in a state that contributes to such a nasty political agenda.
Public health. I mean, I see here, well, on Kirkwood, there used to be a lot of homeless people. I know the opioid epidemic is really big, and I mean, changing public health would impact safety, and
Maybe the Sunday liquor law. Because we have a industry in this state of winery, small winery folks, and I think it would help them, although they can sell on Sunday. But, you know, other places ought to be able to sell on Sunday, too.
It's politics. Just way too conservative. They need to be a little bit more liberal on some things. I'm conservative, but sometimes you have to be a liberal on certain items.
Oh, I'd like to have the, I think the issue with gerrymandering. I think we need districts that actually are competitive and give the people a say. Well, it gives the people a say. Right now, it's just a, you know, if the only competition is in essentially the Republican primary, you've just got a tendency to go ever further to the right.
Probably legalize marijuana because it would help our economy and keep people out of the system who don't belong in the system.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Lindsay Jones, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Von Parvosky. Engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music was provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered to you directly. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.